Welcome to the Context Matters podcast. I am your host, Cindy Parker. I am an educator, explorer, writer, and speaker. I enjoy gathering around the table with interesting people who have different life experiences from me. And then we get to talk about God, Bible, theology, and other tangentially related subjects. Your voice is always welcomed around this table. You can reach out to me and let me know what you're thinking about through my website, narrativeofplace.com. We are finishing out our year looking at Gospels with a nod towards Luke because, well, that just felt seasonal for a time when most people are reading Luke in church. And joining us today is Dr. Janine Brown, who is the New Testament professor at Bethel Seminary. We are talking about her recent book called The Gospels as Stories. Last week, we talked about what you can glean when you read a gospel or a book, any book in the Bible, actually, as a created whole. What themes run throughout? What is the author focusing on? Why are events recorded in a particular order? Today, we're going to begin by looking at the early chapters of Luke, but not just chapter 2, the nativity chapter. Let's look at chapters 1 through 9. What themes does Luke develop and how does he do it?
Yeah, it's lovely. Luke, I always said Luke was my last gospel because it was the one I knew the least. I did more work in Matthew and John, and of course, Mark. If you've done work in Matthew, you kind of can kind of backwards and see Mark. So, but I've just loved pressing in Luke in my third chapter in the book. I look at Luke and plot, Luke and plotting. And I love that idea of thinking about how does Luke come at us with the story? Where does he start? Because every gospel writer starts quite distinctively. So why does he start there? And so the first two chapters, the birth, the infancy narratives, John and Jesus, this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, meant to parallel each other. Of course, Jesus is the greater one, but there's no disparaging of John either, you know? And they're tied together with these amazing songs.
This would be Mary's song in chapter 1, verses 45 to 55. She sings right after meeting up with Elizabeth, and the infant in Elizabeth's womb reacted to the infant in Mary's womb. And Zechariah's song after the naming of John in chapter 1, verses 67 through 79.
So you get the songs that are just beautiful and very kind of the Septuagintal feel of this whole section. So these are things scholars have all noted, but it was just fun to talk about it in terms of character and plot and how we see women very prominent in Luke. And already in the birth narrative, we hear Mary and we hear Elizabeth. You don't hear Mary in Matthew. You get to see her, but you don't get to hear her. So how fun. So yeah, I didn't even know exactly how to start, but it is starting to plot that out. I start to make maps, plot theme diagrams or maps of texts.
I love
because it helps
maps.
I imagine you love them.
I know.
Yeah, and it would be fun to actually make a more map-like map. Mine are just like on a square sheet of paper, and they're very linear. They don't meander like people on their journeys typically do. Like you could imagine maybe Jesus in the travel narrative meandering somewhat. Got, you know, a whole 10 chapters or 11 chapters to get from Galilee to Jerusalem. Fewer chapters in both Mark and Matthew in that section. So it's fun to kind of visualize that and picture how that maps out. So I do some brief visualizations and then show my Luke plot theme diagram for chapters 5 through 9. Just to kind of show how we can show the plot, and that usually that needs to be stay somewhat sequential, and then the themes, how they weave together, how they land in different sections, and a bit of Isaiah 49 showing up in Simeon's reflections on redemption, restoration for Israel, light for the nations. And so themes of peace, themes of redemption of Israel are so significant in the infancy narratives of Luke. So just so much introduced that will be picked up. It starts in the temple, ends in the temple. That's Luke, beginning, ends in the temple. So just all those features that mean something theologically?
I found myself completely like captured by some of the ideas, because later you do mention the travel narratives that mm-hmm. happen in mm-hmm. Luke. It's a big theme, especially when you read Luke and Acts together. The direction right. of travel in both of those yes. books is really, yes. really fun.
Yeah, there are parallels between Luke and Acts. Yes, very intentional.
Yeah, and I found myself, because I adore the geography and I hang out mm-hmm. all the time in geography, mm-hmm. I love traveling narratives yeah. in terms of the geography. And for the first time, I started thinking of a traveling narrative in terms of a plot being pushed as much as mm. the geography being pushed. And that was such a fun thought experiment in going, is the geography another element of this mm-hmm. plot that is being developed? So the geography is included in the plot development in this way. So yeah. I found myself wanting to just stop and spend an entire afternoon, which I haven't done yet, kind of like working through it. But I thought that was such a fun thing to think of geography as narrative as much as the narrative and plot development.
Yeah, and
it's really fun.
Because I know your interest in geography, I was thinking, even as I was preparing for this conversation, how the geography might have, certainly sits at the plot level within this setting, kind of idea of setting, but also may have some purchase thematically. So I was trying to think and play with that. And it struck me, one of the things I emphasize that's, again, not unique to me, none of my Luke stuff would ever be unique to me in the book, but the fact that meal scenes populate this part of the narrative as well. And across, there's like 10 meal scenes at least across Luke, and Luke is particularly interested in them. And then I thought, started to think about when you're traveling and you need to eat, and you know, just kind of this whole back and forth of traveling and stopping to eat and eating with Mary and Martha and eating with others along the way and traveling and eating and traveling and eating. And so I haven't thought much more beyond that. I mean, again, this may not have huge theological significance with a capital P, but it is interesting that those things matter, you know, and through the Luke and travel narrative, you keep on hearing Jerusalem as the point of destination emphasized. And again, there are 11 chapters of the travel narrative. Mark has 3, Matthew has 5, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. So there's just an emphasis on this setting his face toward Jerusalem. That language comes in Luke, however you translate that sort of more helpfully, maybe for a modern audience, but, you know, setting direction.
Yeah.
Going, but yet going and taking a long time to get there. So, you know, resolutely setting his mind to go to Jerusalem. And then let's take a long 11 chapters. And it's where you find a lot of the parables that are unique to Luke. You have emphasis on prayer. You have emphasis on wealth and the poor, and there are healings. There's just all sorts of stuff. And if you look at commentaries on Luke, it's the part that's so most variably outlined. I think it's impossible to outline this part, or very difficult to do it, because it's not conducive so much to an outline. But I found my students do a plot theme diagram on precisely this section of Luke, and they come away knowing the travel narrative better than I know it, because they have spent so much time in that travel narrative thinking about the twists and the turns. And I say, you can do this in any format you want. So I've had a wall hanging made by a particular student that goes up to Jerusalem, right? So it has all the various pieces plot-wise. It keeps sequence and it shows theme. And I'm like, this is gorgeous.
Beautiful.
And it was a student who didn't like writing papers at seminary all that much, but clearly loved this assignment. I had somebody bring in bottles with string attached and put it on my desk, because it was like a performance art. I mean, it was this gorgeous, beautiful glass bottles, string with little notes on the different places, and it had to be set up to be fully appreciated. So she came and set it up for me. I'm like, this is the best assignment ever. Now, online students, a little more difficult to do this. So they've gone primarily to color and, you know, PowerPoint or somehow some, you know, but I had big poster boards back in the old day. I had scrolls that went across the room. I mean, it just had creativity going all over the place. And they knew that travel narrative, not just one passage and how to exegete it. And that's a good thing. And they learned those skills at Bethel as well. But this was just the vista, right?
Yeah. I'm so fascinated because I adore meals as well. So meals and geography. And now
I think
story.
Me and I could write something about there. We could do this.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, wow, are those meals inserted in particular geography in order to provide an exclamation point in a theme?
See, that's off the top of your head. If not, I don't see Luke. I lost the gospel, right? But he comes to the village where Martha and Mary are. It doesn't mention sort of that it's Bethany. It doesn't. I think it, you know, the emphasis really is on Jerusalem. Cool.
Yeah.
But came
right.
to a village, and they're making a meal. They're, you know, and yeah, that would be interesting to look at to see how that populates.
Yeah, if you're going to insert a meal not only to reflect the human necessity and the humanness of the story yeah. of needing to have meals, but you're choosing to add in a specific meal where the assumption is they had lots of meals all along the way. So why a meal with Zacchaeus? Why a meal with Mary and Martha? Why a meal with the Pharisees, you know?
Yeah. And then Jesus talks in has parables with meals in them as well. So it's interesting. I haven't read enough on that topic, but I think it would be very interesting. And there are articles and books on meals in Luke. So I think that would be an interesting place to go to see if there's a connection with the travel, with the geography. Yeah. And of course, the gospel ends in chapter 24 with a meal.
Oh, right. Of course.
You know, yes. So there we go. Kind of an interesting place to end. So connection, at least there, is pretty significant. Yeah. I mean, those two go together in the storyline of that the briefer vignette, although that's pretty long vignette in Luke, longer than some of them.
I'd like to ask then also, just since we've been talking about, as you plot even a theme or the plotting, the development of a plot in the story itself, what role do characters play? I mean, are the various people who come in, because we don't get inside their head. So we don't
know.
I mean, very rarely do we have anything related to what they're thinking. We just have what they say and what they do. So are they there to push the plot along? Or are they there to serve a different kind of function? And then what function would that be?
And character studies in the Gospels have sort of run the gamut. In ancient characterization, characters in my study, in my dissertation, a little section of a chapter on this, are more about plot functionaries than they are kind of personality on their own terms, right? You can leave a movie and go, the characters were just amazing. You didn't even have to have a plot, you know, to kind of a modern or contemporary movie. If they've got good characters, you're all set. That wasn't the case in the ancient world, but more and more, scholars are emphasizing that characters do more than that too. There is this sense of this sense of identification we get them shows that they are more than just plot functionaries. People are meant to sometimes identify with them, and that we get more of their personhood because of that, or at least with that. And of course, some characters more than others. Nicodemus, oh my goodness, or the Samaritan woman. She's, you know, longest conversation of anybody with Jesus, right? And then the history of interpretation has been so varied on her. Some quite unkind, some quite not unkind, but not my tradition. You know, it's like, wait, I don't know that tradition. I like that tradition. I want a tradition that actually notices that she's the evangelist. You know,
right. Why
wouldn't we notice that? Or that sin is never mentioned. Okay, that would be good to know. So there are some characters that have that depth of what we see in them, even if they're only one point in the narrative. So characters are fascinating, though. It just, for the amount of space we get and the lack of thought, their thoughts, people, I mean, characters are where we're drawn.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's partly the identification. I have done an assignment in my hermeneutics class, which is both Old and New Testament, on Ruth. And I was asking for plot theme things all the way along. You know, I was knowing what I wanted to see. They had all four chapters of Luke. They weren't doing a commentary. They're doing plot and theme analysis. And I was so surprised at first. And then just, it was confirmed all the way along that they gave me who they identified with. They talked about character, even though that wasn't one of the prompts. You know, I mean, it could fit into a theme, but sometimes it just was, you could see them identifying with, or really not identifying with a character. I mean, there's Boaz, Naomi, Ruth. They're great characters to align with or to find yourself in. And I was just amazed at how profound that was for people in terms of the meaning of the story. Even if they did a good job of talking about theme and plot, it's like, I need to do this. If they had experienced a lot of loss, some people would just talk about Naomi like she was next to their heart. Though it was not a part of the assignment. I was like, wow, this is potent stuff. So I think characters are the, I tend to think of more analytically about them, maybe my wiring and also my study, course of study. I tend to say, no, we can't get into their thoughts. And I might pull them a little more at arm's length than maybe even the narrator would want me to. But it is an interesting, they're just such fascinating people. We build a character with such little information, and some of it we're meant to. And sometimes we go way beyond, you know, what we're given, especially motivations. We start to go, oh, I bet Peter was thinking this and doing this. And I wonder if he was doing that. I'm like, how does it help us get the theme? That's what I'm always asking to get back to. So, but it just tells us something about how important people are. The relationship, even our relationship with characters. Wow, there's something there. We know how to relate to people and we want to. I want to figure them out.
Is there anything when it comes to a narrative approach to Gospels or to some of the letters and epistles that gets under your skin a little bit? That it is, does it, is there something that sits there as a nagging question where you're like, I still have to figure out this one bit? Or do you feel like you've refined this really sharp tool that is like really beautiful and super helpful? Not to put those in binaries, but
yeah, no, I understand. I think the whole idea of narrative theologizing, which is what I think Matthew, Mark, and Luke are doing, but we also do it when we come to the text because we're trying to theologize with Matthew. I mean, I think that's part of it, is Matthew's theologizing with his sources and, you know, the things that about Jesus that he knows. I feel like that's still a relatively new area, even though I've been doing it for a while in different ways. I feel like I still have things to learn. I found in writing chapter 8, which is I do kind of this pattern of the theory and then a practice. So chapter 9, I get into Mark and look at who God is. But chapter 8 was about how do we theologize? How do they theologize? How do then we understand that theologizing or theologize with them? And I did find a lot of material to draw upon. I gave Beverly Gaventa and a really helpful article on Acts and thinking about that. She's got this theological lens. She just knows, you know, she's got theology in her blood. She knows how to do that. I mean, she's such an exceptional biblical scholar. And I love her little phrase in one of her works about the blessed messiness of the text. She brings that to theologizing. So rather than having this abstraction, she's like, you know, I always think about it, it's like a close to the ground kind of helicopter approach instead of airplane approach to theology. So we just keep close to the ground in the text and then in our context and theologizing and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That I feel like there's still more for me to think about and discover, but I used her work and a few other people. And I just feel I drew on some of my own thinking on this topic because I just haven't found people yet who are thinking, how do we really hear the theology of a gospel and not just capitulate by going to the Sermon on the Mount, which of course is a great place to go for theology. Absolutely. But this is a sermon within a story. This is a discourse within a narrative text. So how we really take the reality that we're in a narrative, in a story, and think theologically with the author, or hear Matthew doing theology, theologizing. I feel I'm still on the front end of that. And I'd love to do more work with that. And I think it translates to how I think about Paul theologizing too. I think it's really informed my way of understanding New Testament theology generally, or New Testament theologizing.
It is so encouraging for me to hear someone who is further advanced in their career saying, I'm still at the beginning of solving something. I'm like, oh, good. I don't feel as far behind then. Or just like the permission to just still be asking new questions and finding new things. I find so encouraging to hear.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, if I thought it was all said and done, that would be the worst news ever. And I do think I would love at some point, and I've talked a little bit with my editor, with Jim Kinney, about this, about thinking about, see, he said to me one day, so do you want to write a New Testament theology? Because people start doing that around this time in their career, which I love these work. I mean, Craig Blomberg, you know, Doug New, I just like, keep on writing New Testament or Pauline theology. It's great because I use them. And like, no, I have no desire to do that. But I do want to write a book on New Testament theologizing. How do they do this? Not just what do they say, but how did they get there? That for me is a hermeneutical question that always drives me. And that will always be interesting to me. So that is 10 down, years down the road. Nobody steal that topic because I want that one.
Okay.
So, right. And I'll tell them, yeah, it's New Testament theologizing. So we'll see.
Fantastic.
But that's kind of intrigued me more recently. And because it already draws on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
The kind of, why do we have what we have? And how did they go about getting there? And not so much historical critical question that way, but more about hermeneutical question that way. They all had a location. We all have a location. How does that help us understand the text?
Context matters.
I love that about your podcast and everything about you.
Aw, thanks. Well, thank you so much for taking time away from grading.
Oh, it was so painful to leave grading. Oh. I have one class out of three done. How's that?
Well done. Thank you for coming on and talking about your book. And thank you just for your book. I will highly recommend it. I think people should read it. I hope it leads to a different approach to reading the beauty and the mm-hmm. artistry that is within the Gospels, not as taking away from what they're saying, but as emphasizing mm-hmm. the beauty of
yes.
what they're proclaiming. And I hope people find that in your book.
Yeah, there's more, not less. Yeah, absolutely.
There is more, not less. So much to always be curious about. For instance, what do you know about Jews in Africa and their relationship with the European Ashkenazi Jews? That conversation is coming soon. Although we are going to take 1 week off for a short breather as the new year begins, but then we'll be right back with some really fantastic conversations. As we explore some of these topics, I am so grateful for the help from my Patreon team. People like Natalie and Doug McGee and Lisa Nickel, they make sure that this podcast remains sustainable. I seriously could not do all of this without them. So thank you. I produced this episode. Luke Bronner of Milieu Media Group did the edits and the final mix. And Peter Lordson of Sycamore Sound created the music. I look forward to our conversation in a couple weeks. Until then, and in this new year, be safe, take care of each other, and stay curious about the world around you.